Merhaba, ben Lale Sürmen Aran. İstanbul, Türkiye'de yaşıyorum ve Rick Steves'le birlikte seyahat ediyorum. Now I'm going to give you the English translation of what I just said. I am Lale Sürmen Aran from Istanbul, Turkey, and I travel with Rick Steves. In case you want to hear it once more, the Turkish form of it. Ben Lale Sürmen Aran, İstanbul, Türkiye'denim ve Rick Steves'le seyahat ediyorum.
They say all roads lead to Rome, but if you were a Roman, all roads started in Rome. The wide and straight roads the Romans were famous for began as a way to connect with the empire's eastern capital. Eventually, the Romans built roads that fanned out as far as Britain and Syria. Sections of many of these roads still exist today with their original paving stones. John Cahey spent 3 months tracing the paths of 3 ancient roads that connected Rome with the city we now know of as Istanbul. He describes the experience of traveling to find these ancient routes in his new book called Following Caesar, From Rome to Constantinople, the pathways that planted the seeds of empire. Hey, John, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You know, I can imagine somebody who loves travel and loves history to be sort of inspired by actually walking on those same stones that people like Julius Caesar and Augustus and Cicero and even St. Peter and St. Paul walked on 2,000 or so years ago. What was that like for you? Do you have any special memories of just actually walking on those same stones?
Well, it started for me in Rome itself, in the park where they preserved some of the earliest sections of that road. And I remember walking on a modern paved road, and then all of a sudden it turns to the stones that were laid down by the ancient Romans in 312 BC. That had a real impact. I walked a couple of miles along that stretch, past some monuments and so forth, and it really started sinking in as to what the undertaking was all that time
ago. Oh, yeah. You could even see the ruts in the road that were made by the carriages, couldn't you, the wheels?
Yes. You know, a lot of the stones are missing because they were used in construction of homes through the Middle Ages and so forth, and even in the later Roman Empire. And you can still walk along the sides and so forth. There's well-worn pathways.
Now, that's the Via Appia, right? The Appian Way?
The Appian Way, yes. The queen of all roads, according to the Romans, yes.
Now, John, your book shares your experience as you followed the ancient Appian Way and also the Via Ignatia, 1,000 miles from Rome to Istanbul. Now, of course, that was from the western capital of the Roman Empire to the eastern capital back 1800 years ago when the Roman Empire split, and Istanbul was called Constantinople. Now, I love the map you have in your book with west at the top, and it's a dramatic dive, it looks like, from Rome to Brindisi, across the Adriatic Sea, and then, you know, landing in about Albania, and then going on to Istanbul, where Europe meets Asia. I just think it's cool the way you put that map in your book. You messed up the north. North's not at the top, so it's like a straight dive. It's just like a faucet that goes from western to eastern capitals of the empire. When you look at that map, what do you see?
You can see where you have to go. You can see the direction that you're in geographically. And my map maker is the one who turned it on its ear a little bit to make everything so that it can fit. You see all of these ancient places with modern names, and it takes you along that route. And then when you get to those places, you can find, in most cases, portions of that ancient road, either underneath the highway or to the side or through a farmer's field or along a riverbank or over ancient bridges. It's all there. You just have to seek them out.
Now, tell us about the engineering, John, because I understand Romans were so enamored by engineering. If a Roman tourist came to the United States today, they might want to see, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge and a big freeway interchange rather than paintings in a museum, just because they loved the engineering. And it was sort of marvelous engineering to do 50,000 miles of roads 2,000 years ago to lace together this empire. What do you know about the engineering behind these roads?
Well, you can see the sections coming out of Rome, and there's plenty of charts and so forth that you can look at in various books that shows the different levels and the different layers and how they piled one level on top of another to solidify. They made it wide enough, about 20 feet wide, roughly, for an army to be able to march down these roads. And the wagons that followed them and so forth, they kept the center part primarily for the horses and for the wagons, and the soldiers could march also along the sides in areas that I think the name sidewalks derived from. Yeah. And you also have, there was a high part in the road so that the rainwater would run off. Hence, we have our term highway. That all sort of evolved from that time frame. But there are numerous layers beneath that the engineers built, and they used all kinds of ancient surveying kind of equipment to keep it straight.
I understand Roman engineers liked a straight road. I mean, if you look at a road today anywhere in where the Roman Empire used to be, if it's a very straight road in the middle of the countryside, it's probably built on top of the original Roman road.
Right. And if you go south of Rome and heading down toward Terracina, which is on the coast, that is the straightest part with a modern highway over it that you can see.
Even in England, John, when I'm driving around the Cotswold villages, if you come upon a straight road, you read a little bit about it, and sure enough, that was a 2,000-year-old Roman road. Hey,
that's,
you know,
right.
In your book, you talked about how Caesar borrowed lots of money to finalize the Appian Way. And as you mentioned, it was used by the military. Was it primarily an investment in defense so the army could move quickly from one battle scene to another, or was it more for trade?
It started out as military roads, and a lot of people could not use them because they weren't military. Over time, commercial travelers could use it to haul goods from village to village. But initially, Via Appia and the Via Ignatia were military roads.
Okay.
And they were also toll roads. That's how they were able to maintain these roads, were people paying tolls. And it was the Roman army that built a lot of the earliest roads, along with some slave help from peoples that they conquered.
If you're building 50,000 miles of roads way back then, you must have had access to virtually free labor in the army or slave labor.
John Cahey enjoys exploring the back roads of Italy, and he's helping us walk in the footsteps of Caesar right now on Travel with Rick Steves. John was a reporter for 22 years at the Salt Lake Tribune and is joining us from the studios of KUER. His book, Following Caesar, From Rome to Constantinople, The Pathways That Planted the Seeds of Empire, is due to be released next week. His other titles on Italy include Hidden Tuscany, Sicilian Splendors, and Venice Against the Sea. His website is johncahey.com, spelled K-E-A-H-E-Y.
John, when I read through your book, I'm reminded it's a look at 2,000-year-old Roman culture and engineering and accomplishments in the great empire, but it's also a travel book about taking this road today. And, of course, originally, the road, it's got two names and there's different variations of it, but essentially it's a road from Rome to Constantinople, from the capital of the Western Empire to the capital of the Eastern Empire. And it's complicated, but in the 300s, in the 4th century, the way I understand it, Rome was falling, and the emperor in Rome decided, I'm getting out of here. And he just retreated to a more stable and easy to rule part of the empire. And he established the eastern part of the Roman Empire, which ultimately became the Byzantine Empire. And while Rome fell in the west, it lived on in the east for another 1,000 years or so. Is that a fair distillation of the story of why we got East and West Rome?
That's a great summary. Of course, we know that Constantine eventually converted to Christianity, but he did not make it the state religion of Rome. But anyway, he gave Rome over to the church and went east to Byzantium, and it was later in his life, near his death, that they decided to name it Constantinople.
Right. Now, when you travel it today, take us along that route. Is it worth traveling today, or do you have to be some kind of a history wonk to understand how exciting it is?
Well, if somebody wants to travel the route, like you've pointed out, it's 1,000-mile distance, essentially. And you're on modern roads that either cover or are parallel to or are nearby the ancient route. You can stop along the way and see portions of that ancient route that have been preserved. But the idea is to leave Rome, head south, end up in a wonderful little place called Terracina. That goes down to the coast, and then you can loop through the mountains in a big circle and then end up back in the coast again and go as far as a village called Serestina and it doesn't exist anymore. It's in a modern town called Monte Dragone, and from there you go inland to Capua, where Spartacus trained in the great amphitheater there and began his slave revolt. And you go from there to Benevento and then end up in Brindisium, which is Brindisi today, or Brindisi, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And that's the end of the Via Appia.
Okay, so the only place name I recognize there is Brindisi. From Rome to Brindisi, there's 400 miles. It's mm-hmm. like the first ancient highway, the Via Appia. We talked already about the grand part of the Via Appia that everybody sees. You can bicycle there from downtown Rome. And it's a wonderful hike. It's a wonderful day trip. It's a beautiful, beautiful park that sort of celebrates the beginning of this road. And you get a sense of the engineering and you walk on those stones. You know, the voyage from Brindisi over to essentially where Albania is, that must have been a fairly busy sea route because it was part of the freeway from Rome to Istanbul. Once you landed over there in the Balkan Peninsula, it's 1,000 miles and you get to Istanbul. Now, it didn't have the mighty walls it has today because that was built after the Romans came. But what was it like when that road arrived and when the emperor arrived in Istanbul? What was Istanbul like when it became the eastern capital of Rome?
Well, you have the Golden Gate that was built at that time, and it's about 10 miles, I would say, outside of the city. And the road, Via Ignatia, went through that Golden Gate, and great emperors would arrive in great trains and majesty and so forth and so on, and great processions. And they would follow roads that still exist into Byzantium, Constantinople, and whichever time period.
Right. And I guess it's important to note that it has three names, right? It was first Byzantium, and then it was named after the Roman emperor, Constantinople, and then it became Istanbul when the Muslims took over much, much later.
No, it became, quite frankly, it became, it was Constantinople through the Muslim time. It didn't become Istanbul until the 1920s or 1930s.
Oh, really? Okay.
Under Ataturk.
Wow. So yeah. It's had quite a multi-layered history.
Mm-hmm. And the road ends, as all roads that came through in that part of Turkey, the Eastern Empire, the roads ended at one point just by the Hagia Sophia, which is now a Muslim church. And it ended at a place that was, at one time, I would love to have been able to see it hundreds of years ago, where they call it the Million Stone,
yeah.
And that's with one L, M-I-L-I-O-N. It has nothing to do with the number million.
Right.
It was like a marker
where
all the roads ended.
It's kind of like the zero-mile point or something.
It was a zero marker.
Yes. And I was standing there just a couple weeks ago, John, and
oh, really?
You're surrounded by Hagia Sophia, which that it was a church first and then a mosque, and it was the greatest church in Christendom for 400 years or something,
mm-hmm.
and what an amazing accomplishment. That was actually ancient Roman architecture. You got the Hippodrome, the big stadium there, just like you got the Circus Maximus in Rome, and you got your Egyptian obelisks and all of that, and right there by the Million Stone, you can go downstairs into a cistern, and it was just an awe-inspiring reminder of that Roman engineering incorporated into ancient Istanbul, as they had to have a water system for their capital city. A lot of those sites are below ground level today, reminding us that it's been 1,700 years since they were built, and that's a lot of history and a lot of dust and a lot of rubble from fires and invasions, and it all stacks up over time. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with John Cahey, and John's book is called From Rome to Constantinople, The Pathways That Planted the Seeds of Empire. John, out of this amazing journey that you took, can you just share with us which moment on that road from Rome to Constantinople, present-day Istanbul, what little moment there had the biggest impression on you that you enjoyed including in your book?
I met a tour guide in Brindisi. The first day I was with him, I paid him for a couple of hours to show me around and get acquainted and that kind of thing. And then when he found out what I was interested in, he is an archaeologist by training, and he knows everything there is to know about his city and around his city. Quite frankly, there were two great moments, and they were with him. And he took me to a little town that's between Tarantum, back in the day, Taranto today. He took me to this little town between Taranto and Brindisi, and it's now a ruin. He had a friend who was the archaeologist there, and they opened the gates for us. We walked in, and there was a section of the Via Appia that had just been uncovered and rediscovered a month before. To sit there and look at that and take photographs and to read about it and to talk to the archaeologists about it and so forth was a very high point on the trip. The second high point on the trip was we went north from Brindisi, and there was the Via Traiana that came down from Bari, and there are very few sections of that road that are available to see, but he turned into a farmer's field, and there was this big mound of earth, and there were stones showing out from around this mound, and this was a bridge, the footing of a bridge that had once crossed a great river that does not exist anymore. It's not on the register. Archaeologists know about it, but there's no protection of it. A farmer could come in. If he wants another few acres in his field, he could tear it all down, and there would be no repercussions. And to stand on those stones, that was the Via Traiana, which was built probably 300, 400 years after the death of Caesar. That was quite a moment. And to look at that river, what used to be a river is now a sort of a valley that's growing crops and so forth. But it was a major river that went inland from the Adriatic Sea.
You know, it's a good reminder that there's a lot that went on 2,000 years ago that we can hardly, it's hard to overestimate what the Romans did from an engineering point of view. And in so many ways, dirt is the great preserver. Boy, I don't know about you, but I would imagine it's fun with your breadth of understanding of this to just fantasize about all the wonders that lie intact to this day underneath that covering of dirt that over time will be excavated, studied, and shared with all of us curious travelers.
I would also recommend that on the other side of the Adriatic, that people go to North Macedonia. It's a new nation. It's only existed under that name for 3 or 4 years, and it was once part of Yugoslavia. There's a section of the Via Ignatia that was discovered fairly recently that I was led up to and sat on, and that was also a great moment. But North Macedonia and Lake Ohrid are wonderful, wonderful places to be.
Lake Ohrid had a special resonance with me when I was exploring that part of Macedonia, and I just didn't realize that has an ancient Roman connection also. So it's a beautiful lake to check out. It's a fascinating culture of former Yugoslavia, and as you mentioned, it's a chance to gain a better appreciation of an ancient Roman road.
And I'm sure you drove around on that road around the lake where Via Ignatia is probably sitting under.
And probably, like so many times, drove right over something I didn't even know was down there. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with John Cahey. And John, congratulations on your book, Following Caesar, From Rome to Constantinople, The Pathways That Planted the Seeds of Empire, and best wishes in your future writing and travels.
Well, thank you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Kaz Murrah-Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Sheila Gerzoff handles affiliate promotions, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Look at Rick's checklist for what to pack in your suitcase and share tips with fellow travelers. It's part of our online travel forum that you'll find at ricksteves.com. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.